besten Liebe ist der Sicher, Singapur. Alle Gott das besser, weil jetzt das Christkindle kommt, die ist erklungen. Die Löwe lass jetzt drin. Es ist Bimble. Es geht ja das Christkindle sing.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. This is episode 49. We're almost at the 50 episode mark, my friend.
Yes, sir. We'll get there before Christmas.
That's true. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, we did more episodes this year than last year since we bumped it up to once a week as opposed to once a month, how we started. It's pretty crazy. I mean, before long, we'll be at 100 episodes. It's pretty wild.
That's crazy.
But you're in Oberstdorf this week, right?
Yes, I am in Oberstdorf since Friday last week. Mm-hmm. And I will stay here basically until Christmas or also over Christmas. Since I got some holiday left at work And now I work 2 days a week from home office. And the rest of the time I try just to enjoy the beautiful nature here, since we still got to deal with a lot of restrictions in our everyday life. And I think it's a pretty privileged situation to spend your time in this kind of second lockdown here.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what we both did for the first lockdown.
Yeah.
I think our listeners heard that you were with your family as you are now, and then I was staying in these apartments up in the mountains, and it's just beautiful. Like, it's a weird time when you feel kind of quarantined or locked in, but it's, like you said, it's kind of a grateful situation to be in that area for that, because you can really step outside and have all this open space, and you can go on, you know, you're very sporty in that region. Like, you know, you go skiing and stuff. And for me, it was nice to go on these long walks and go hiking and stuff that I don't normally do. And it was nice to get some fresh air. And but what is, like, in Oberstdorf, like, what is the social temperature like right now in terms of Corona? Is it like a more fearful zeitgeist right now, or you know, how is that?
I love how you always try to bring in this one German word, you know.
I always love slipping in zeitgeist.
but the temperature, as you call it, is pretty low in terms of
like, people aren't as freaked out.
People aren't as freaked out, but I gotta admit, because of Corona, I did not see and talk to that many people, and the people I talk to are like, yeah, we will have big issues here because this whole region feeds of tourism and winter tourism. Right. And a lot of hotels and like the ski schools and whatever, yeah, are worried about if they still exist in spring after this Corona winter. So that is still a big thing. But in everyday life, it's kind of weird because it is a ghost town basically. And that's something in Oberstdorf I know only in like 1 or 2 weeks in November or early December, like until now. Mm-hmm. Normally, because the rest of the year, since tourism's also started to grow that big also in summer. Mm-hmm. And you always have like shitloads of people all over the place, basically all year. And yeah, now it is so quiet. It is basically a ghost town. You walk through town and it is one street. All the shops are closed. You see nobody. A lot of shutters in front of the windows.
Right. Yeah.
And then in the next street, you see maybe like two shops that are open, but all of the restaurants are empty, etc. And especially in a region that lives off tourism and a lot of people being around and being in shops and restaurants and using the gondola up the mountains, etc. This is pretty weird. Plus, I already messed up one time because in the I don't want to say inner city, but in the like the pedestrian only area. What do you call it? Like Fußgängerzone.
A pedestrian zone.
Pedestrian zone. That was pretty close.
You were pretty close, yeah.
Midtown, you also have to wear a mask there. On the streets. And I didn't know that. And I was walking along because I was going somewhere for a podcast recording. And I was having my headphones on playing a new album. And then at some point, there was a woman shouting at me. And I was like, what the fuck? What did I do wrong? And she's like, yeah, wear a mask. Wear a mask. And I'm like, I'm outside. And she says, yeah. And this pedestrian zone all over Oberstdorf, you got to wear a mask. So yeah, it's pretty weird here, especially it's already so quiet. Plus, it started snowing on Saturday. Yeah. And sadly, we didn't get that much snow as the rest of the Alps, where they're like nearly drowning in snow, like in Switzerland and Italy and parts of Austria. But even though, the snow like absorbs so many noises and sounds, and it gets quieter. Yeah. But it already is so quiet.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I was in Oberstdorf not too long ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, and I already had that same feeling. It hadn't snowed yet, but I kept thinking, this is very few people. I kept thinking, this feels very strange. I mean, I've been in Oberstdorf a lot, and it always feels very crowded. I always feel like very much as the odd man out, because I see so many people all in this skiing gear and snowboarding gear and, you know, sporty clothing and just all bustling around and in a hussy, you know, getting around in a fuss. And I don't know, I went there a couple of weeks ago, and it like you said, it's a ghost town, and it's very barren and very quiet. And you know, they were telling me, this is what it's like when it's only the locals.
Yeah, and it's weird. you really start to feel that also when you go shopping. My mom was grocery shopping on Saturday, and she was like, yeah, now that the tourists are gone, the supermarket doesn't even give a shit if all the products are there.
They don't even stock the stores.
She was like, I wanted to buy this and that and I don't know what, and they didn't have it. And she wanted to make a pumpkin soup in the evening, and they didn't have any, and they didn't refill, and also with, I don't know, other groceries.
That's like, okay, so crazy.
You start to realize that really this whole region only lives off this one big economical bubble, which is tourism.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
And yeah, and that was also weird. To get to the topic of today's episode, on Klausentag on Sunday, because normally,
tell me what happened.
A lot of people are out there in the streets, and we talked about it when they come into town in this big kind of huddle and run down the main street, and like hundreds of people standing on the side of the street, and obviously that did not happen, and it was weird. And normally, even if you stay at home, because it is quiet because of the snow, etc., you hear the bells all over town, even if you're just sitting on your balcony or in your living room. And yeah.
Wasn't this the first year since it began that it was like officially canceled?
Yeah, it was like practically seen. It was the first time since World War II that it has been canceled. And before it, I don't think it ever was officially canceled, but it just didn't take place because of in times of war, etc.
Of course,
but
yeah.
It could be that it's been the first time that there really was an announcement before where they said, okay, this is not allowed, we cannot let that take place.
Were you surprised that they were going to cancel that? Because from my perspective, ever since they canceled Wiesn or Oktoberfest, I figured everything else was kind of shot for the year.
I was totally not surprised. Like, because of two reasons. The first is that they still got this big event we already talked about in an early episode. In February, this skiing world championship in Oberstdorf.
Right.
Which they really want to take place. And it needs to take place with an audience or without, with fans right. or without them.
Right.
And because of that, there is kind of a policy that, okay, we cancel every little event before to still have a bigger chance to let that one event take place where a lot of money has been put in by the region, by the town, etc. Right. in February. So that's the first reason why I already thought they're going to cancel it. And the second is that when you think about it, and we're going to have a story later where we also talk about this. First of all, we already learned in the last episode in the Clausen part one that because of the outfits they wear, basically they wear a face mask. So that's a good thing.
That's true. Yeah.
So you got your whole face covered. That is a good thing. But the other thing is you don't do it on your own. You're not alone. You always have like groups of five or six Clausen running. Mm-hmm. That is the first problem. And the second is that the whole thing contains the part where after they did this big run through the main street, where the little groups of Clausen, like the Rudel, how you call it, go visit people in their living rooms. And that's basically mm-hmm. a super spreader event. Like yeah. having this one group of five people.
Going into every single home, touching the glasses.
Yeah, going to every single home, touching everything. Yeah. Maybe having raw chicken heads with them or whatever. So obviously
it's possible.
That is a big argument for letting it not take place. And at the end of the day, something took place on Sunday. And that's also something we'll have in the story later. And I was surprised.
Were you?
How? And I was not surprised that there were people doing it. But I was surprised how the police dealt with it. And all in all, besides one little incident, which is kind of ridiculous, they were really relaxed about it. So the police were, yeah, because it was forbidden, but obviously there were Clausen, like running in groups of two, which is legally still allowed, etc. And don't going to people's home, but maybe just showing up in front of the house, making some sound. Maybe someone brings them a drink outside. That's what happened. And the police were not that strict that they were like, okay, this is forbidden. We're going to arrest you. We're going to send you home, whatever. So they would let the few Clausen that were around do their thing, basically. And that is something that actually surprised me regarding my my experiences with the local police here.
And why did it surprise you so much? Because I feel like people who are from that region were kind of thankful for that spectacle, even though it had to take place differently than it normally has before. But I think, do you think maybe some people were kind of also thankful to see it? It was like a little bit of normal for them.
Yeah, sure. No, I was just surprised by how relaxed the police was, because usually even if it's allowed to do the whole thing, they are super strict. And basically you could say they're just doing their job well. If they forbid something, they look after it and punish the people who don't follow the rules, etc. And
right.
the main rule was basically there is no Clausentreiben. Don't wear your costume and go out. And still people did that in smaller groups and right. like looking that they would not would stay within this this legal area, and right. also regarding taking care about people's health, etc. But that they would let them pass and do their thing, even though they forbid it in the first place.
Okay.
That's basically what I was surprised about, which yeah. is cool, because still for many people, like you said, it was nice to still see them. And my little baby sister and my dad were standing at the window, and there were like two Clausen. One of them was Max, running over this huge field in front of our house. And mm-hmm. you would see the snow. You would, in the dark, you would maybe see one of the horns blinking, and you would hear the bells. And it just makes for a great effect.
I had some friends who went down to this town pretty close to Oberstdorf called Schölang.
Mm-hmm.
Schölang. And I saw some videos of the Klausen running there, and it seemed like they were wearing like bigger bells than normal to make
more sound.
Yeah. Was that, you think that was probably a choice to say like, okay, we can't do our normal run. We have to do like this very, you know, confined version of our normal tradition. So let's make this big of an impression as we can.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people did that. From the people I knew that were participating in Oberstdorf, they did not do that. They would wear the same bells they would wear in any year. Mm-hmm. Maybe even lighter, because since they were not allowed and it was not possible to do this kind of, have this kind of route and having a stop here and at this guy's home and having a stop here at this family's home, etc. So the runs were longer for them from one station where they knew, okay, there's this one friend of ours and he's bringing a few drinks out in front of the garage or so we can keep distance, etc. And there were only a few of them, so the ways were longer and they had to run longer, and so they were not wearing heavier belts.
Oh, okay. That's crazy. How many years actually have you been, how many years have you ran as a Klausen?
Let me count. 1, 2, 3, 5.
5 years already?
5 years, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
I missed it one time, but yeah, 5 times. Yeah.
And when you listened to the interview I did with old man Josef, the old wise man, the mage, how did you feel about being like the new generation of Klausen, like compared to what he talked about with his father's brother, like his uncle, or with, you know, how his generation handled it? You know, did you think that stuff sounds absolutely crazy? Or in your opinion, since you were a Klausen or you are one, do you think, yeah, that's just kind of how it goes? And, you know, do you see it evolving as clearly as he does? Or do you think, like, how do you feel about that difference he talked about?
First of all, that's when Seb closed that story, I had to laugh so hard because he was like, yeah, it's just a funny story to tell. And you're like, what the fuck? Yeah. They mistreated this woman so bad, she got to jail. What the fuck?
They stripped her naked and threw her in a well and put her in
jail.
He
was like, yeah.
He's like, that's a funny
regular
story.
Regular Friday night with the boys.
They just went out and played some cards.
back to your question. First of all, the story he told, it didn't shock me because I also already knew about how it took place and what happened in earlier times and how crazy they were. There is also some footage, and I wanted to find it for our social media, but I didn't find it. Like a TV piece about the Klausentreiben in Oberstdorf, and it's from the 60s or 70s. And there's like footage of a police car driving at, I don't know, 35, 40 kilometers per hour. And there's like four Klausen standing on the car, on the hood, hitting on the windows, etc. So they were like crazy, yeah. But I also am super happy with how it is handled nowadays, and that these super crazy things are not tolerized anymore. Like, yeah, I'm not shocked that this happened, and I know that, but I'm still happy that we are... it's still a weird tradition, and it's still something that has... such a brutal vibe to it, but I'm still happy that we have found a way to make it, and this still sounds weird, a bit more human or civilized. I don't know if you can really use that word for this event. And I think Oberstdorf still is in a great position where this thing can exist now, because in other towns around Allgäu, like Sonthofen, they also still have a Klausentreiben, but they had really bad experiences with stories like Sepp told, and even worse in earlier times. And so now the Klausentreiben takes place like this big event, and people meet on this, on this big square in front of a church or something, or on the main square in Sonthofen. And then there's the Klausentreiben, but it basically takes place within a cage. So the Klausen are basically in between gates. Like, it looks like they're in a cage, and they run around and make some sound and have to disappear after, an hour or two. And that sucks, basically, because that takes away the magic. It's like it's like carnival then.
It's like a lion in a cage.
That still most of the people know how to behave when they wear those costumes and those bells and are equipped with their rods. And like, you will learn later also tools like a bull's penis.
I have some questions about that.
But it still is allowed to take place in this kind of raw way, where they come from the woods, they run around, they do their thing, but it still works that those very, very bad things and mistreatings do not happen anymore.
Mm. And just on the topic of something that he said that I wanted to ask you about, I asked him if he noticed if the amount of participants in the Klausen tradition was getting less each year, and if he thought that eventually it as a tradition in whole might fade out or transition into something different altogether. Do you feel that that's possible, or do you feel the same way as him that it will never go away?
I think it has the potential, like he said, to never go away and to still take place for many, many years to come. Because there are still so many kids growing up with it, and so many young boys wanting to participate. I mean, it was the same for me. Like you broke it down to a very good point where you said, Josef, I feel like you were scared of them until you were 17 or something, and
became one.
Yeah. And when I think about my childhood, I was also so super scared. For me, it was like when I first saw the movie The Purge. That's what it felt to me as a kid. And like he said, one very beautiful sentence, it's the worst evening of the year, but the best night.
Right.
Because you fear it in advance as a kid. Like when it's getting cold in fall, you already start to feel, you know, it's getting cold, you're getting closer to December. Ah, goddamn.
Oh man, that must be so
And then when
crazy.
You go to bed after Klausentreiben, it's the best night's sleep you'll get all year as a kid, because you know, yes, now I got another 365 days to live.
Yeah, it's over. That must be the best feeling, man.
And regarding the participants, what I experienced in the 5 years I took part is that it was not getting less. It was like there were up and downs, which had a lot of to do with on which weekday the 6th of December was. So obviously if it's on a Friday or a Saturday, a lot more people are going to participate, because they don't have to worry about, do I have to take a day off at work the day after, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And in the 5 years, I definitely, because last year when I participated, I thought, okay, this is really going down. These are really not that many Klausen. But the year before I missed out, but 2 years before it were like 150 or something.
That's
which
a lot.
Is quite a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think it still has the potential to go on like this for many, many years to come. The only thing that I could think about that could make it stop is like political changes, or changes in the, in how the society in Oberstdorf lives together, that the society here says, okay, we've come over this. We don't need this anymore as the community of Oberstdorf. But since we both know things change slowly here, I don't think that's going to happen so soon.
But I think it's interesting to see that the behavior of the people in the tradition has actually changed over only like two or three generations, as we heard.
Yeah.
Like between Josef's dad and you, that's at least three big generation gaps there. And it changed quite a lot, like just the behavior itself. So I think maybe if the behavior of itself keeps evolving to the like the social climate of the era that it's taking place in, perhaps the act itself doesn't have to evolve into something else. Like maybe that doesn't have to go away, because I can see what it means to a lot of people. I hear what it means in people's voices when they talk about it, like especially between you and Josef. And I think it's great that there is something like that that's so old and means something so like to so many people. But it is even more interesting to me as an outsider to see it evolving into something else without losing that special touch, you know?
Yeah, totally. And that's something this evolving that you would experience, or at least I experienced participating. And we talked so much about the brutal sides of it. And after all we talked about in the last episode and this so far, so many outsiders could think, okay, this is just some super weird, brutal thing. How can they still do this? But let's take a quick look about the beautiful side of it, which is basically, and that's about the evolving. The first time I took place, obviously I was about to, this might sound very, very basic, but it is something about this, becoming a man thing, this coming of age as a young guy. If you participate for the first time with, I don't know, 16, and you do it, and you are super hyped. You build your first costume together with your dad or something, and you think, I'm gonna build those heavy rods, and I'm gonna give back some of the violence I experience, etc. And obviously, that is not such a good thing. But after the first year, where I was really around and chasing after people and making them do things like we've heard in the last episode. It changed from year to year and became more like, okay, it's not about running around and hurting people or mistreat them or anything or punish anyone for anybody they might have done. But it's more about those parts like, I know for 2 years, this friend of mine would dress up as Saint Nicholas and we would together visit other befriended families of my family. And their children, and would play the classic good cop, bad cop thing with Saint Nicholas and the evil Klaus.
That's cool.
And then go on this run, and this is still something I really love as well as a spectator, as well as a participant. This main run in the beginning, because it just makes for a great image and a great sound experience and whatever. But after that, we started just to focus on going from stop to stop and to visit people. And that is the beautiful thing, because basically everybody lets you in and offers you drinks and food, and you meet so many people you don't see all year, especially me, having moved somewhere else a few years ago.
Right.
And you see those people you see once a year, and you have great conversations and hang out with this one family you haven't seen in a year, and get a great dinner there and some boat side basically and some beers. Then you move on to the next and you see a friend you haven't seen in a while, etc., etc. And this socializing part is the beautiful part about it, I think. And for me, the more times I took part, the more I set the focus on this part of it, like just meeting people and maybe obviously showing up there and making for an impressive image, but then get in there, get in touch with people, having a good time and get hammered, obviously. That's a side effect of it. And this is something I see with many Klausen that take part, that it is evolving in general more and more into this way of, okay, it is about meeting people and having this tradition that you, because we all already talked about Oberstdorf and that people are sometimes seem so closed and focused on their private life and are not that open basically. And this that's completely changed on Klausentag. I've been invited to people's home I didn't know in my whole life before. Maybe they knew my dad or something. And I always thought, okay, these are people that are not so open and that always seem kind of grumpy. And then this one evening, everyone has an open heart and open mind for everything. And that is what I find so beautiful about it, because I did not experience it that much before in Oberstdorf. And that's why I still love to participate. And I think that is something that has the potential to live on for many, many years.
That's a really well put description of the other side of things, because I think, me included, a lot of people don't often think about that side of it. Another question I had just before we get into the interviews that you set up was, how often is it the case that when someone, like, let's say you turn 17 or 18 and you become a Klausen, how common is it that people visit their own family? Does that happen?
Yeah, sure. One tradition that you do is when you have your group that you run with, your Rudel, you start at one of the guys' home, and their family would make Cashbatzen. So you have a foundation for all the schnapps you're about to drink that night. And that's where you dress up and you eat Cashbatzen. And after that, obviously you visit a lot of families of the members of your group you run with. We never really visited my family because of the little children, and it would get so late because we would start at 7:30 at a whole other part of Oberstdorf. So we never really visited my family, but in general, that's a thing.
Okay. And finally, like, within the normal group that you go around with, what is the overall behavior towards little children when you do enter a house that has them? Like, is there expectation from the parents for you to act a certain way, to maybe give some sort of lesson? I know that, you know, we'll talk later about, you know, your friend Max carries sweets around for certain kids to show us, like, a kinder side. But do you were you ever asked by somebody, like, hey, when you come over later, or, you know, if you happen to stop by, you know, little Johnny or little Hans or whatever, you know, took, you know, a euro out of my wallet, you know, maybe give him like a little lesson, or, like, you know, has that ever happened with you and your friends before?
Yeah, sure. And it happens more likely, like I just said, when I did this with my friend who dressed up as St. Nicholas, that you do this before you start the Klausen run.
I see.
So when it gets dark at around, I don't know, 5, and then maybe at 5:30, you're going to meet some of those families, and then they would send you a lot of stuff their children did, etc. And St. Nicholas would have a speech where he has all this listed up, and then you play this whole good cop, bad cop thing. But also, yeah, like you mentioned, it happens a lot that people tell you in advance, yeah, if it happens that you stop by our place, by the way, little Maria, little, I don't know, Hans, like you said, did this and that, could you make up for
pedagogical lesson?
Statement. Yeah. So that happens. And visiting those families, is also a thing, but you try to do it earlier because later the children go to bed, plus you are more and more drunk, and
it gets a little looser as you go along.
Yeah, that's not the part you have to show little kids. And also you you try to do that earlier because later when you get to the stations, you would always take off your heads.
That was the last thing I wanted to ask about, actually, because not to cut you off, but with Josef, you know, he and of course his kids and stuff, they all say that, you know, no one ever takes their helmets off. But with your generation, the ones that I've been the most confronted with, you always do. Like, when did that start?
I don't think this is something that is new and that started now, but
okay.
The basic rule is never take off your head on the streets or outside of an house. Maybe if it's a backyard and you go out for a cigarette, okay. But don't take your head off on the streets, or you're not a Klausen anymore and other Klausen will hit you.
Really?
Plus, never take off your head in front of children to not destroy the magic.
So they take them off because I'm not around kids.
Yeah, that's a thing. And that's why, imagine you being with the Geigers, and that's also the story Sarah talked about. That's the stations you do later in the evening where you just go to people to eat and drink. And then you take off your head to drink, etc.
Sure.
But and that's why you mostly plan to visit families with kids earlier. And there you don't take off your head, obviously, just not to destroy the magic.
I see. Okay, that makes a lot more sense. Yes. So it's just all about the timing, seeing the kids early on, later on, just like getting drunk and following the street rules of it. Man, I feel like I drilled you a lot, but I really learned a lot about, you know, doing these two episodes, listening to the stories that we're about to play and doing the last episode with Josef and with Sarah. I really feel like I've learned a lot about this, and I have a new perspective on it. And I don't want to sound like I don't get excited about it whenever I talk about this, you know, one bad experience I had, or how, you know, I'm still someone who, like, I can respect traditions without getting 100% involved in them or like wanting to go be a part of them every year. You know, like, there's so many different traditions in so many different countries all around the world. And some of them I find like beautiful and interesting enough to investigate a little bit, maybe to even see once or twice. And some of them interest me less. And this one definitely is unique and special to this region and is interesting, very interesting. But I feel like I'm always disappointing Germans from the South when they find out that I'm not always like stoked to go, you know. But maybe that's also because in that region, like, a lot of people do know me. I'm the American, you know. So like, it's easier for me to be on a spotlight instead of, you know, like Sarah kind of being on the sideline and just watching the whole thing and being like, wow, this is crazy. You know, when you're dragged into it, it's a bit, bit different. And probably that's just a little bit of baby trauma I'm going to have to swallow and move on for next year, if it happens properly next year.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, there's some people who definitely want me to go, so.
Yeah, and I think basically the stoke about it, like I and people like Max have it, really comes from having this, I don't know, full life experience growing up with it.
Definitely.
And I'm super glad we could also talk about the beautiful parts about it. And before we get into stories, there's one little story that I always picture and that always makes me excited about it, about this big get together, is like a few years ago, a father of a friend of mine was not in a good in a good health status. He had some operations before and he couldn't really leave the house, and he lived his whole life here, and he always also got hyped and stoked about it. And there was so much bad things going on in his life. And then we went there and you could really see how it enlightened him and how he was happy like a little child that Klausen would visit his home. And that's one of those little stories that really makes me hyped every year again because of this great get-together.
That's so sweet, man. That's great. Well, cool. Before we, so let's not keep people waiting too much longer. Do you want to set up what the interviews are that we're going to hear, or like the stories that you pulled for us?
Yeah. So basically, because what we haven't talked about is that there is a version of Klausenberg, or I don't want to call it a version. There's an equal thing for women, and it's 2 days before 6th of December, so on 4th of December. And one friend of mine, Nadine, has participated for a few years, and she's going to tell us about what that is like. Funny thing, she messed up one thing, maybe because she talked in English and connected that so deep with America. She said they run on 4th of July. Instead of 4th of December, but it's 4th of
December.
That would
be so hot. That would be so terrible in those big helmets to run in the 4th of July. So it's on the 4th of December.
On the 4th of December, it's St. Barbara's Day, and they're called Bärbele. And she's going to tell us about her experience. And then I had a conversation with my very close friend, Max, we talked about earlier, about his experience participating this year, which was kind of super special, plus a little bit about the history of it. Some parts about the history of Clausen we haven't had in the first episode, plus the history of this female version, Babeltag, and where does it come from and why they might have issues to continue that tradition and why there are less women participating. There's some bad parts about it. But yeah, you're going to hear that in a conversation we recorded yesterday, so on Tuesday.
So first you want to play Max's or Nadine's?
Let's play Nadine's first, just to give an impression how it's like to be a participant on Babeltag. What you say about this?
Sounds great.
And then you'll get the backstory together with my very close friend Max. And I say thank you, Jordan, for doing this and for spreading the word about this super weird tradition.
I think it fits this show pretty well to do a two-parter on this insane situation. Why don't we just go ahead and play those, and then we'll talk a little bit before we say bye.
What is special for me at the Bärbeletreiben? For me, it's a special thing that you come together with your friends and they build one Rudel. So you run all together and go from house to house, get drinks. And while you get from house to house, you're chasing after the boys, hunting them. And there's one big thing you always have to have in your head if you're a Babel. Because the girls, they run on the 4th of July, so St. Barbara, and the boys on the 6th. So there's a big tradition that every girl that goes out or hunting as a Babel, that she also has to go out on the 6th, and that all the boys see the girls and all the girls see the boys. So if you were hunting or going out on the 4th, then you have to go out on the 6th as well. So whatever you do on the 4th, you get the revenge on the 6th from the boys. So there's a really big, big thing you have to have in your head. And yeah, I also like about going out that you always see different houses or different people, and it depends in which house you go, which sort of alcohol you get. And there's also a big difference between the boys and the girls, because the boys, they get schnapps and beer, and the girls, they get schnapps and beer and wine and liqueur, and like they get everything together. So I think it's quite harder for the girls for the next morning. That's also a rule. If you are going out on the evening, on the Babel or on the Clausen, then you have to go into the next day you have to go into school, because most of them are younger, or you have to go to work on the next day. So you're not allowed to stay at home. And what is also a difference about that the girls, they a little bit like, so the Scherla, which means like the bells, they are a little bit not that much loud or not so loud than from the boys, which mean that they can walk quite quiet behind the people and then start running after them. So that's a cool thing too, because the girls, they don't wear like a big head, so it's not so hot for them, so they can run for longer distances. That's also very nice. And the boys are not that scared of the girls, so they think it's not that hard. And that's a good thing for the girls, because then they're not scared. And so it's easier to catch them.
Hola. Hey, Max.
Hello.
So this
let's
is
switch in English.
This is something new for you, or for both of us. You live with me when I'm in Oberstdorf for quite some time now. You're kind of the older brother I never had in this household.
The brother you never wished for.
not the brother I need, but the one that I deserve.
Yes.
And we talk a lot on the phone, but obviously always in German, partly in this weird southern dialect. And so this is new in English, and we want to talk about your Klausen experience this year, since the Klausentag, like Jordan and Sepp and Sarah described it in the last episode, is prohibited because of COVID, and still there was some form of Klausentag. First of all, what were you able to do this Sunday?
I think it's easier to tell you what we not allowed to do this year for me.
Okay.
Because normally you walk around the town and go from house to house, some people you know, and they let you in sometimes in
like in the living room, or
in the living room, and sometimes only in a shop,
kind of a garage or something.
In a kind of like a garage or something. And yes, it was forbidden this year because of the of Corona. You can't walk you're not allowed to walk in to somebody else's house. Yes, and. So you only walk through the town like every year, but when you're somewhere you want to go and drink there some schnapps or beer or wine or something, you have to stay out. And the most of the people you go to the years before, they're won't let you in anymore, and they don't hand you something out before the houses. So, it was difficult to find a station you can go to. So you have to run more than the years before because you have less stations go to,
because it was forbidden. Because if you think about the main activity, it would be kind of a super spreader event, because on the one hand people said let those guys run because they wear masks, their faces covered, but you run in groups, plus the main activity is go from house to house, from living room to living room, and so obviously that doesn't work with COVID. And still there was a possibility for you to do it, but without a group, first of all, and you did not have that many stations, and you had to run quite a lot.
A lot more than any year before.
For our listeners, since we live together, yesterday, I think you woke up around 2:30 p.m., and I saw you walking out of your room. Your whole body was aching, and you were like,
I think I woke up at 10, but I couldn't stand up. It was too hard. muscle sickness,
kind of aching.
Aching, yes.
Aching
yes.
Muscles, yeah.
And yeah, because we run a lot more than any year before, and with the costume you wear and the Schäler, the bells,
it's quite some weight.
It's a lot of weight you have to carry. And then there was a snow was falling at this night, and nobody cleaned up in the night the streets, so it was difficult more and more.
But the most important question is, why did you do it? Since it was forbidden the first hand.
So we
can say you and a close friend ran as a team of two, which is still legal. So you did nothing illegal, basically. Yeah. But why did you do it?
It's a lot of fun every year. Not the drinking or maybe hurt somebody with the route. It's not one of these things. To be wild. One night a year, you can be a wild monster.
A total creep.
Yes, maybe.
And I guess, so as far, I did not participate, but I didn't see you guys, but my dad saw you and he said it was pretty spectacular. And the great view, seeing you guys coming over a huge field covered of snow, the mountains in the back, and you hear the sounds.
Some fog on the field.
Yeah. So it was maybe also about the kind of mystical effect these creatures bring to this town.
The other peoples are a little scared of you. And I think that's funny because I'm not a bad guy.
Totally not.
but then I think it's a little bit funny when somebody's scared of you, but you're no bad guy who wants to hurt anybody, or it's kind of mystery because nobody see your face, and you're loud with the bells, and you do you scream.
Yeah.
And
and for kids it feels like the purge.
But I'm a kind Klaus to kids.
You always have sweets with you.
The last years I always have some sweets with me. Like on Carnival I go, if I see some kids, I go to them and give them sweets. Maybe if they sing, it's cool, but if they do not, so it is.
You don't feel the need to hurt them with your rod
or
your bull's penis or whatever you care with.
Never. Yeah.
Last year we wanted to get, because we were doing it together, and we wanted to get this, and I got to admit it's kind of semi-legal, because Klausen wear these rods. With the hit people with, or mostly what we always do just to make noise, hit like road signs, etc. And we wanted to get those pieces of a bull, and we knew it as Ochsenfiesel. And then we went to a shop where people buy, I don't know what to call it, a pet shop, basically a pet shop. Yeah.
It's a pet shop. Yeah.
And then we realized what an Ochsenfiesel is, and it's basically a peeled off and dried bull's penis. And you can get it in the pet shop because it's kind of a snack for dogs or something. Mm. Then we were running around with those huge penises.
You say maybe it's not that legal. I think the most people would say it's weird.
Yeah. How was the experience for you this year? Because I think a situation like this, where it's not allowed to happen with over 100 Klausen running together in this big huddle through town and making this huge noise, there hasn't been something like that, especially since you're really into history and the history of Oberstdorf, like since World War II. And so how did it feel? Was it
every year it happens since World War II, since the end of it, I think. But it was difficult, but same. You walk through the town and you have the bells at your costume. And basically this is what you hear if you walk as a Klaus. For the other guys who aren't Klausen or Bärbele this year, I think it was, leiser einfach.
Yeah, like you didn't have that sound experience.
Yeah, but for me it was more of the same. But this big rudel at the beginning of the Klausen evening,
where they all meet at that bridge, and then the horn sounds, and like 150 of these creatures run down the main street.
That didn't happen this year. But I think it was also an experience because the whole town was like a ghost town this evening. And that's where the tradition comes from.
That's a very good point, because that's something besides all the great stories we've heard in the last episode that hasn't been talked about so much, the history of it. So where does it originally come from? We know already from the last episode that it's that people have done it for ages.
It's an old pagan tradition before the Christianity comes.
Before this region was Christianized.
Yes, and there were the young guys wearing some horns at the top and fur and belts or chains and maybe other metallic things
that make sound
and go through the town for do something against the ghosts they think are in town, because when the wind blows in this cold season, November, the beginning of the real winter, and it's the long nights and everything, it's cold outside, and the people staying at home, and because they have no work to do outside on the fields or something, and then they hear the wind blow, and then they think there are ghosts outside.
So they believe the winds running through town were actual ghosts.
They can't explain themselves why there's some sounds at this season, and then they go outside looking like monsters, like the Klausen, and do a lot of their sounds to disturb the ghosts,
to kind of make them go away, basically.
Yes. Good. Yeah,
and that's where it comes from, because it is on St. Nicholas Day, but it hasn't necessarily something to do with it. And as far as I know it, correct me if I'm wrong, when this region was Christianized, the Catholic Church wanted this kind of old habit to not be continued, but they didn't have the power to do it, or they couldn't prohibit it. And so they somehow found a solution how to combine this old pre-Christian habit with the celebration of St. Nicholas Day.
Yes, like Christmas, maybe Jesus was not born at 24th of December, but now we are celebrating Christmas at this day or Easter.
And because they could, the Klausen or Krampus, or they call it something else, Pärchen in other regions, they could not prohibit that. They just made it the bad cop to Saint Nicholas the good cop. That's basically what happened.
Yes, I think so.
And we all also talked about World War II, because we're going to hear one more story from a good friend of mine who told us her story about the Bärbeltag, which is basically the female version of Klausentag. And it happens 2 days before Saint Nicholas on Saint Barbara's Day, and that's why they're called Bärbele, because of Barbara. And we also talked about World War II already, or that it had started to, or it has not been interrupted since World War II. But you told me before that there is a correlation between the war and the kind of tradition of Bärbeletag.
Yes, there were two women at the first days after the World War. They want to have something like the Klausen in Oberstdorf, because a lot of men were dead.
There were no young men left, basically.
Imprisoned. or in prison. Yes, and then they said, let's do this by our own.
Oh, I'm not going to accept that phone call.
The Beverly, no.
Go on.
And yes, they can't wear the Klausen has, maybe because it was expensive, the fur or the horns or the day. But they have other things they could wear and look scary too, with belts, and ran through the town 2 days before to do something similar to the Klausentag.
And how did it look like for all our listeners who cannot picture that?
Somebody who haven't seen it before would say like witches.
Yeah.
But they have old dirndl. They're wearing old dirndl, and often a gestrickter kittel, and
the cardigans, but in a more rough alpine way.
In a more traditional way, and masks they can. Yes, like the Klausen.
But that's a big difference. They wear actual masks they put on their face, because Klausen wear those big helmets with fur on it that falls over their shoulders. But Beble wear actual masks, and they built those masks out of, I don't know, wood and moss and any parts that you could crop off a tree that that grows around here.
Yes.
Just to make the difference, because they were actual masks and Klausen wear those big helmets.
Yeah, and but they have belts too, and Rute, and they ran through the town like the Klausen, but they're not that scary, I think.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I as a child, I found them quite as scary as the Klausen.
I was tall as a kid, and I always, since I remember, I was taller than the most Beverlys, and maybe I think
people can see you to the day, you would still make for a good basketball player.
Yeah,
you're a pretty huge guy. But I always found them pretty scary, and they have one big advantage regarding the difference between Klausen and Beverly, because one thing we already heard in the last episode, that the people are really scared and run away from them. From the perspective of someone who has run Klausen several times, it's not that realistic. If someone really wants to run away, that you'll actually get him, because you carry all that weight. You only have those two little holes where you can see through the fur, so you don't see really good around you. And Beverly don't carry that much weight and see better. So that was the thing as a child. If you it was harder to escape the Beverly than the Klausen, because you always knew, if I wanted to escape from a huddle of Klausen, or run forward, find some, I don't know, some garden, jump over the fence and disappear in the darkness, and they won't find you.
Right.
But Beverly always seemed more, they had more radius, and they were faster, and it seemed like, okay, you really gotta watch out that they don't catch you. How did you celebrate Babeltag? Because we talked a lot about how people spend Klausentag, and families are sitting at home and waiting for Saint Nicholas and the evil Klausen to come to their place. How does this look on Babeltag?
A few years ago, when I lived at my parents' home, then we have to think about, yes, we want to run as a Klaus, so we have to go out. That's the rule. That's the rule.
If you do one of those, so if you're a girl and you run on Babele, you have to go out on a Klausentag, and the other way around, if you run as a Klausen, you have to go out on Babeltag.
Yes, and my parents have a big garage at home. And then we bought some beer and wine and schnapps and a lot of drinks and snacks. And then we invited all Bärbele in the whole town to come to this station. And so they did.
And so they did. And those were great parties.
Yes. And one year we were 20 guys. No. Who wants to run as a Klaus 2 days later. And I think 7 or 8 Rudel, 40 Bärbele, kind of. Yeah, it was very funny, but everybody was really, really drunk. And yeah, but that's the thing you do these days.
That's the thing. Did you ever do, because that's something I did, and I can explain it in a second. Did you ever do, we called it, and I know this is a difficult term, but we did it. Did you ever do a Bärbele safari?
No, I think at the 5th of December there in some towns around Oberstdorf, some Klausen, and yeah, one year we drive with the car to the towns and look, but no, nothing to me.
So. Okay, but that's basically that's what we did when I. A few weeks after I got my driver's license, we took the car and we drove around the Allgäu, because it's not only Oberstdorf, it's all the little villages around who have those traditions. And in every little village and town, we stopped and were looking for the Bärbele. And that's what we did. And we had, and badly, I was the driver I was driving this big van with like 8 seats in it, and all of the other guys were super drunk after the first village, because we had like 4 cases of beer and several bottles of schnapps in the car, and did a kind of Bärbele safari and were looking for them in each little village. And there was one friend of us who drove on his own, and until today he's not the greatest driver, but he drove a pretty huge car. And in every little village where there was snow and he had to turn around somewhere, it was a big spectacle, because he hit some doors or some little huts. So you could imagine it. But that's what we did a lot of times. But one last thing I want to talk about before we get to Nadine's little story, that's her name, of a Bärbele experience. What I saw over the past few years, or what I feel like, is that it's getting less and less girls and young women participating in Bärbele Tag.
Yes,
do you know any of the reasons for this, or
maybe it has something to do with the next days? So if you drink a lot of alcohol and you have to work a day later, it's hard. Maybe the bosses do not accept that they come on at lunchtime, or they.
But that's something you also have with the men with Klausentag, and there's still every year there are so many people participating on Klausentag. But I mean, I wanted to ask you how you see it, and sadly Nadine didn't talk about it. Or was not sadly, but. I don't want to speak for everyone here, but I saw a lot and read about a lot of cases during the past years, a lot of cases of harassment of Bärbele, because like you said, you're not that scared and they're not that huge and seem not that strong, that many young men attack them, basically. Is that something you have experienced or saw in Oberstdorf?
When I was last year or 2 years ago, after midnight at a station, and there were coming some Bärbele at their last station. I asked them.
So there stops basically.
There stops. Yeah. But it was the last stop, and so they finished after that. And then I asked them, now this year, what do you say? Everything's cool. And then they said, never again, never again.
Because they'll do it never again.
Because of the harassment, and they see in town, and they're by themselves, they were harassed.
Yeah.
And then I had the idea, maybe, if in every Bärbele Rudel participating one Klaus to keep the assholes away, maybe that is an idea, but
yeah, because it is really sad, because regarding equality, each Bärbele Tag should take place, and it's equally as cool as Klausentag. And it's super sad that because of assholes who don't know how to behave towards women, women don't want to do it anymore. And I think we can just say, people stop being dickheads. And
you think you have to think it's a tradition who is an emancipatoris.
Yeah,
because the women invented it. They're very strong and said, we have to do something to keep the tradition alive, and
it came from women. Yeah.
Yes, and because of some assholes, maybe it is over in a few years if there are no Bärbele anymore. Who want to do it because of such things.
And that is super sad. And I think we can just say, men, stop being assholes, and women, feel empowered and go on and keep this great tradition alive, and make yourself some great rods to kick these assholes' asses. And big thank you to you, Max, for participating in this little show.
Thank you.
Cool, man. All right. I think I really like Nadine's story. I think she was very informative. And I think it was really nice of her. So thank you, Nadine, for telling. I know that a lot of people, when they are, their native tongue isn't English, that it's a little bit scary for them. Like with Max as well, it was always also really nice that he did the interview with Nadine to send in her story. I really appreciate that a lot. And I was really curious, about what that feeling must be for women, but it kind of feels like, from her perspective, to be pretty similar to how it is for a guy. Like, it's just kind of a fun adventure.
Yeah, it basically isn't it?
That's cool.
And that is something I always really admired about it, that in, I don't know, conservative southern Germany, there are still so many issues to be fixed about gender equality, etc. But since so many decades, there has been this little form of gender equality in this tradition. I was scared of both so much, basically, that we didn't talk about that, because as a kid, you get both. You get Bärbeltag and Klausentag, and you are basically feared of this week in total, because it could happen to you as a kid that you would have Bärbeltag on the 4th, on the 5th, they would make a kind of Klausentag in school, like in high school where I was. God. And then the older like the senior high schoolers who already participated, both Bärbele and Clausen, would dress up, and then the last hour of school, they would run around school, and they were also allowed to hit teachers. That's what it made it pretty attractive.
Okay, that's actually kind of cool.
And little kids, and it was so scary because it was within a building. They were running down the school's hallway, etc. And that could happen on the 5th, and then on the 6th, there would be Klausentag. So if you're like a 10-year-old, that could make for a very, very, very scary week.
That's a long 72 hours.
Yeah.
That's a long week. Yeah. And thanks to Max too, because that, you know, it's cool to hear. I really wanted to hear from someone's perspective that ran this year, because it's kind of a weird year. And, you know, they, like we talked about before we played the clips, you know, they weren't supposed to do it. And people were wondering if it was going to be like officially canceled, but I think it's one of those traditions that the people of the region respect enough to allow these small, I don't want to like blatantly say like illegal, but just like these kind of, you know, what's it called? Like it's something that takes place that they were like maybe deep down hoping that people would kind of rebel a little bit, and they can still moderate the limitations around it, like, you know, two people at a time, not entering the houses, you know, not as long of a run as they usually do and stuff like that. So maybe creating new guidelines given the circumstances, but I think it's kind of cool to hear from someone that did it under these new terms, you know?
Yeah. And I just also want to give a big shout out and a big thank you to Nadine and Max for opening up and telling me those stories in a language that isn't your native tongue.
Exactly.
With kind of a barrier. And that was so awesome. Thank you guys so much. Cool.
Do you have any besides? Oh, I did have one last question, and we can settle it here. So you talked about carrying a dried up bull's penis around to whip people. Are there besides like
that is? By the way, that is illegal. That is forbidden any year.
that is forbidden. Okay, I was going to ask like what other things have been carried around to whip people with, like what's the range, the array of things.
Yeah, over the years, you have heard the tales of guys wearing many, many things, like also chains. And like actual whips, or types of actual whips,
like Indiana Jones,
but they would cut in the top so that it would hurt more when you hit people. Then there were like so many brutal things. Then people would, so that's the tale you hear, would build those rods, and you build those rods out of those tiny, tiny sticks of bushes and trees, like a hazelnut bush, like those. Mm-hmm. And you bind them together. Mm-hmm. And people would in the middle of it, would fit in this, I don't know the word for it, Stacheldraht, like those fences with those spikes on it.
Oh, what barbed wire.
Yeah. They would,
oh my God,
they would,
man,
bind
this is
that
the purge.
within their rods. And because a lot of those things happened before Clausen started, at Eubelehalle, you might know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you played there, lol. that's where they started.
Long
start.
Time ago, though.
That was a great show. That's where they start. And before they start, police and people of the Trachtenverein, who basically organize the event, or what there is to organize, make a kind of a control. And there are kind of regulations on what you're allowed to carry. So you are not allowed to carry anything that is not a rod made out of these tiny sticks. And the first, or the top meter of it, you are not allowed to wind that, because mm-hmm. you wind them together, but the first meter has to be free so that it's not that hard. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there are strict regulations about what you are allowed to carry with you and how it looks like, and they control that basically, because there has been a lot of very bad things people carried around and hit other people with. And so they're pretty strict about that. And that's a good thing, basically.
Yeah, that's cool. Man, okay. I think for me, that wraps up the Clausen Spectacular. Unless there's anything else you wanted to add that maybe we missed with Josef or Max or yourself or Nadine?
Nothing that comes to my mind right now, no. I think this has been a pretty nice story. And I hope for our listeners who are not who not have their origins in a region that practices habits like that, we could explain it or try to or make people understand why it is a thing and not just the purge.
and not just the purge, yeah.
Yeah.
So for those who have enjoyed this special, thank you so very much for listening. If you enjoy the show in general, you can support us on patreon.com/JordanPrince, or you can go to wherever you're listening to the show. You can go to iTunes, for example, and give us a rating or a comment or a share. It really helps new listeners find shows like this. You'd be very surprised how much that helps. And also just telling a friend, word of mouth goes a long way. So please, thank you so much. If you enjoy the show, give us a share. And Mo, where can they find us or write to us?
Both on Instagram at @artifartsimmigrants. You can follow us there to not miss any of our content, especially sometimes we have like footage and images to our episodes. Yeah,
you can go there and see, you can see the pictures of the Clausen.
Of the Clausen, yeah.
That's right, from last week's episode, yeah.
And you can DM us there, or you can send us a good old-fashioned email to podcast@m945.de.
And just before I forget, the song that we heard on last week's episode, I think I didn't mention it.
Ooh, yeah.
Right, so I interviewed the old wise man, Josef. That's his band. He has a band in that region, and they sing only specifically in that regional dialect. So not every German can even understand them. It's very unique to that location, and it's called Joram Lee. You can find that song on YouTube. You'll have to say how it's pronounced.
Klausentag.
Like Klausentag, yeah, but yeah. It's actually in the dialect. Yeah.
And I think since you mentioned it, I'm going to play it again on this show since Josef allowed us to play it, because it makes a great intro for this special. And yeah, you can find them on YouTube. And yeah, we can just pack that into the show notes.
Yes, we'll add that in this time around. So again, thank you so much for listening, guys, and we'll see you next week for episode 50.
Bye-bye.
Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now, baby blue.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.